All-Star game, a lot of people talking bad about it, being all like, they need to switch this up. I enjoyed it. I like seeing them have fun. Like, NBA All-Star game, I enjoy seeing them have fun, play around, just shoot threes. Like, I don't really need to see, it would be nice to see them be competitive, but like, it's honestly really cool to see Dame Lillard just shoot from half court and knock it down. That's just my hot take.
I disagree. It was absolute trash. I don't even enjoy the All-Star game anymore or even All-Star weekend. Like, you don't
understand. Did you watch the skills competition? The skills competition was fun.
It was on this weekend, but I just don't really care for it no more. It's just not competitive. It's not fun anymore. Like, when I was growing up, it was a thing, bro. In the house, it was a thing that we would get together. We're going to watch the All-Star game because they used to compete. Whoever became the MVP, like MVPs in All-Star game don't really matter anymore. That was like something you could say with pride. If you got an MVP in the All-Star game, like, you were nice. Who cares now? Who cares who gets it? They don't even try.
But if you're watching the game, like, Dame was hitting threes, bro. Like, automatic, like, crazy threes. Like, that means something. Like, he's one of the greatest three-point shooters of all time. Like, that's what it means, and that's what he showed.
I'd rather watch the Harlem Globetrotters.
You're lying. Why are you lying on the podcast? Like, you're lying on the podcast.
Because the Harlem Globetrotters put in more
effort. Stephen A. right now. Stephen A. said that LeBron James ruined the dunk contest. I didn't even watch the clip. I was like, Stephen A., you're tripping. He really ruined the dunk contest. LeBron, of all people, LeBron ruined it just because he didn't want to do it.
Players don't care about the All-Star. That's a whole nother conversation, but I kind of get what he was saying. The players just ruined it because they stopped caring. It holds nothing anymore. All-Star game was really good back in the day because that was a way to promote the sport. They don't need to do that no more. So they just don't try, in my opinion.
I enjoyed it. I had fun. Also enjoyed seeing T. Big ups to T doing her thing. All-Star weekend. Shout out to
Crazy.
Her. Let's get into it though, Aaron. I'm Joshua Potts, Mr. Possible, always with the brother with the same mother, Aaron Potts, super hot Potts. And you're watching and listening to your favorite Two Black Runners every single
Tuesday. Yes, sir. We are back and we are excited for a great, great, great episode, great interview we have for today. I don't even know what much more to say about this one, Joshua. This has to be one of my favorite podcasts. I feel like it was one of the most smooth that we have done. And I think this is gonna spark something in a lot of people's brains. They're gonna be like, whoa, I didn't know about this, and then all this was happening and stuff.
There's really not anything to say. Like, sit back, chill, listen, be inspired, and really learn something new. I would recommend take out a notebook, open up your notes on your phone, because this man's gonna drop some names that you probably should search up and like learn more about. He was saying people I never heard of, but I'm all like, wait, I'm opening up my tab real quick because I want to know, like, who are these people he's talking about? Because these are interesting historical figures that paved the way for Black runners all across the board, and really that no one talks about and that need to be celebrated, especially in February and especially 365 all the time throughout the year. It's a great listen.
Great listen for sure. And for us to just be in there and be able to learn more about the history of people advocating for Black people in the sport is also important. It's important to know the history of your community and know the people that, you know, made that path and what they had to go through along the way, how they got started. It helps you in within what you're doing. So I'm super excited that we were able to highlight this on the podcast, and you'll hear more about it throughout the interview that we'll get to in a second here.
Yeah. And besides like our little NBA All-Star talk in the beginning, we cut out all track talk. We're going to leave that in a podcast this coming up Thursday. We're going to talk about my Melrose Games experience. We're going to talk about an update on Aaron's LA Marathon, only a month away. It's coming up. We're going to talk about U.S. indoors. We're going to talk about all the world records that went down. We're going to talk about everything on Thursday in a special Two Black Runners Running Report edition. This Thursday, we're exclusively making this all the interview. That's how special this interview ended up being. So, like, that just knows it emphasizes that y'all need to listen to this. Like, this is important information, especially towards the end of Black History Month. Am I missing anything, Aaron, before we get into this?
No, man. I would say without further ado, Tony Reed, the one, the only. Make sure y'all listen. Get your popcorn ready.
Now join us on the podcast, a special guest, 2 years in the making, the co-founder and executive director of the National Black Marathons Association. This guy that we have here has completed 50 marathons in 50 states, first Black man to complete marathons on all 7 continents. Honestly, like somebody that's behind the scenes making it happening for Black distance runners across all aspects. What the National Black Marathons Association has done has been incredible. Tony Reed has been doing that work. And that's who we have on the podcast here today to join us for this little interview to really talk about what's going down. Tony, it's a pleasure. Like I said, this is 2 years in the making. We met you all the way back at Running USA. It's wild that you finally here on the podcast. Thank you for coming on. We appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's I'm looking forward to this. I know we've run into each other at other events around the country also, up at with New York City at the New York Roadrunners, at Harlem Run. And
yeah.
Our paths just kind of keep crossing.
No, and like when I was texting you earlier today, I think it's really cool that we get to have you on our platform. It's an honor because like you're doing a lot of the work that we dream of being able to do and accomplish. So it's always cool, you know, to give a nod to people who are leaders in this world that we're in. I think you're definitely serving your community, and I feel like that 100% makes you a leader. So I just want to say thank you for all the work that you have done for our people in this space, and that you continue to do. If y'all ain't watching this like on video, this man has about 100 or something medals behind him. So today we really wanted to just introduce you all into Tony and all the amazing things. If you know, you know, because he's done everything from documentaries to creating scholarship programs, writing books. We already said all the races that he has done. But for me, I'm gonna get on my soapbox. There are people out here that are doing the work. A lot of the time, we all want to start our own thing. You know, I'm going to speak to my people right now. We all want to start our own things, and we're all very excited to do things. But I think one thing that we all can do is try to connect and reach out with those people that are already doing it. So I'm happy that we have the pleasure today to bring Tony onto the podcast, learn about what you're doing, figure out what you got coming up next, and you know, how people can contribute. But I guess going into that, Tony, how are you doing right now? What are you coming off of? I'm sure you're into something right now that you're working on.
Well, right now we are, still kind of working on the second documentary called We Are Distance Runners, Untold Stories of African-American Athletes. So that's still going through the film festival process right now and still kind of getting feedback and making changes to that documentary. So that's one of the projects that I'm working on. The other one is really just working with Gary Corbett, who is truly the master, the godfather, the owner, I guess you might say, of the Black running history. So still working with him, learning a lot of things, and really trying to get these stories out there.
Yeah, and so if you all don't know, We Are Distance Runners. It features Dick Gregory. Dick Gregory is a civil rights activist, very much into health and wellness. I did not know that he was an athlete like that, a runner. So that's crazy that you're bringing light to that. But Tony also is the director of Breaking 3 Hours, which highlights African-American women that break 3 hours. I feel like that really blew up, I don't know, a couple years ago, people noticing that, you know, there wasn't that many women that had broken 3 hours. And I guess my first question today is, how did that process start? You do so many things that we'll have to get through, but I want to start with the films. What gave you the idea, or like, what made you even think like, yo, I'm going to make a documentary, or I'm going to make a film about this subject in particular?
Well, it's crazy. Believe it or not, it started with a 4,000 mile road trip. So a friend of mine and I decided that we were going to go on this 4,000 mile road trip from Dallas and eventually make our way down to Orlando, Florida, where Marilyn Bevins was being inducted into the RRCA, National Distance Running Hall of Fame. And my friend made a comment, you know, they go, you know, does anyone know about this lady, her accomplishments?
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned, I said, well, yeah, I says, I wrote an article about her that was in Runner's World, and mm-hmm. we inducted her into our Hall of Fame. And they said, well, no, you know, something more needs to be done. And my friend just kind of looked at me like, and I expect you to be the one to do something else about it. So after driving from Dallas to Orlando, made my way up to the East Coast, to the Williamsburg area, where I traditionally have dinner with Sika Henry, who is now the first African-American female professional triathlete, and also with Lisa Davis. And Lisa Davis has also run now 200 marathons, marathons in all 50 states, marathons on all 7 continents, and set the world record for running marathons on all 7 continents. But at that time, she hadn't done that. And so the 4 of us sat there, and I kind of tossed around with them this idea about a documentary featuring African-American women who broke 3 hours in a marathon. Then went from there. And by the way, Sika was originally going to be doing the voiceover for the documentary. She had not broken 3 hours.
Mm.
Then drove from there up to Baltimore, where I had dinner with Marilyn Bevins and Elisa Harvey. And again, talked with them about this, the concept of this documentary. And the key to it was, you know, Marilyn Bevins agreeing to be in it. So Marilyn said right there, yes, she would be in a documentary. Elisa Harvey said that she would be in it. Continued to make my way on up to East Coast, stopped off in New York City. Had lunch with Ted Metalis, talked with him about the concept. He thought it was great. Made my way up to Boston, talked with a couple of folks at the BAA. Came all the way back around to Indiana, where I had lunch with Howie Kofleski. So he and I were talking about the concept.
Y'all know this man name dropping right now. He just went through a couple. That's crazy.
Well, all of us know each other. And believe it or not, when we get together, a lot of times we never talk about running. So then made my way to my hometown of St. Louis, and there talked with my sister, who's a podiatrist, about this whole concept, made my way back around to Dallas and just dove into reading books about documentaries, how to go about making them, and just went ahead and put it out there and started working on it. So to put it in perspective, Marilyn Bevins was the first African-American woman to break 3 hours in a marathon in 1975. There have been 14 million Americans that crossed the finish line of marathon since 1975, and only 2% have ever run a marathon in under 3 hours. So you're looking at 280,000. And of that 280,000, about 20 were African-American women born in this country. And Gary Corbett has started creating what became known as the list of African-American women who broke 3 hours in the marathon. Of those 20 women, I happen to have known 9 of them. So I reached out to them, and they all agreed to be in the documentary.
Man, that's wild. And the thing that most surprised me about that conversation that you had with your friend on this 4,000-mile road trip is that a documentary is ambitious, Tony. And I think it's something that you definitely learn once you said you started studying just how to make a documentary and everything. Like, that's an ambitious task. Like, I remember 3 years ago, I was like, I'm going to do a vlogumentary, like a 12-episode series on YouTube and talk about my college journey. I never finished that. I got like 4 or 5 episodes in. Like, to do something with video and a different people and moving pieces is so ambitious. But I seem like for you, you've always been doing ambitious things, even back to 2004, creating the National Black Marathon Association. Just like, what was it like? Why do you feel like you really needed to hit this and like make sure this need happened? Because it seems like, I don't know, I'm pretty sure there was things that were stopping you from making this Breaking 3 Hours marathon documentary, but like, you were able to persevere, make it happen, and win some prestigious awards along with it.
Well, I attribute it to having good soft skills. And for me, one of my best soft skills is being able to accept criticism. So I remember after we worked on a documentary, I showed it to, like most people, you know, you show it to your relatives, and they proceeded to rake me over the coals. And it was one of these things where my whole thing was, I'm just gonna sit there, I'm gonna listen. I'm not gonna be kind of going through my head about, you know, well, how I'm gonna respond to what they're saying. But you just sit there and you just literally just take it all in. And then think about it over several days and not be so defensive about it. And with that, I incorporated just by all of the changes that they were talking about. Even with the second documentary, when I showed it to my family members again, they looked at it and it's like, you know, there needs to be some changes made. And I remember getting a text message from my daughter where she was apologizing for what she had said. And I responded back to her and says, well, you didn't tell me what I wanted to hear, but you told me what I needed to hear. And that's what's important. So for me, it's just being able to sit back and accept criticism and really think about it was the key to both of these documentaries.
Yeah, no, that's big what you're saying, because you're a very accomplished person. Like, you have a lot of different degrees. You're in Hall of Fames with road running, all the medals, a ton of accomplishments. You have your CPA. So to be able to be still, you know, taking back that criticism, that shows how humble you are. And it shows that you're really, that makes me think that you really are just trying to do good for the people that you're serving. Like, you're really trying to make sure this comes out well. That's all that really matters to you. But which, kind of going back to what Joshua was saying, I even think, so the documentary is crazy, but let's go back to when you were a part of creating the National Black Marathoners Association. Did you just run a marathon one time, didn't see enough black people, and you were like,
I gotta make this, it needs to happen.
You were like, we need to get together. Was it that, or like, how did that come about?
Like, what sparks that?
Well, I actually ran my first marathon in 1982. And at the starting line of my first of that marathon, there were about, I guess, 4 or 5 blacks in a race and about 400 to 500 whites. And the white guys around me who didn't know anything about me were telling me I was in the wrong race, that I needed to consider running in shorter races. And I'm sitting up here listening to these guys. You know, they didn't know anything about my background. But they didn't realize was that I had 2 running role models. One of them was Dick Gregory. Again, he's from my hometown of St. Louis. And I figured if he could run, for 71 days from LA to New York, and average about 48 miles a day, what's 26.2 miles in one day? The other interesting role model I had was Benjamin Coleman. And Benjamin Coleman was my great-grandfather, who was born in 1840 in Mississippi, which meant he spent the first 25 years of his life as a slave. Mm. And I imagined him being there at the Windsor Plantation near Alcorn State University, thinking about freedom. But the overseer master is saying, you can't run far. I don't want you to run past the gate of this plantation. And what he was doing, he was putting Benjamin Coleman in a box. He was telling him what he could and couldn't do. And I kind of think that this whole myth about Blacks not being able to run distance is tied to those days of slavery where we were told we cannot run far. And if you're on a road, you have to walk, because if you look like you're running, they think you're running to freedom. So thinking about those two guys is what got me through that first marathon. I continued running marathons because I had a goal of running 50 marathons before I turned 50. And in most of the marathons I was in, there were fewer than a handful of Black runners. If not, I was usually the only Black person there at the marathon. In 2001, I was speaking at the National Black Data Processing Association's conference in Chicago. And I just happened to mention that, you know, hey, I've run 47 marathons and have 3 more to go to reach number 50. And after I finished, these Blacks just kind of surrounded me and says, we've never met another Black who's run as many marathons as you have. And as we started talking, I found out that they were marathoners also. They said, hey, you know, well, when you get ready to run your 50th, let us know. So I let them know, and they all showed up here in Dallas for the race. And all of us ended up getting a medal for placing in our age group or weight division. And we thought, you know, it would be pretty cool, you know, if we could do something like this maybe once a year. And Charlotte Simmons was a part of that group who eventually became the co-founder of the National Black Marathoners Association. So between 2001 and 2004, we kind of traded emails back and forth, talked about it on the phone. And so finally, I got on the phone and called her and says, I got all the paperwork done. We have the National Black Marathoners Association. And we struggled with the name of the organization because we were thinking, well, you know, we're going to be open to everyone. Do we call ourselves National Black Runners Association or what? And we decided on keeping marathoners there in the name because it let people know that we were serious about the sport. We weren't just kind of, I would say, just kind of playing around. Yeah. We also knew they were going to immediately go and check out our backgrounds to see whether or not, you know, she and I were both the real thing. And so as they started looking at our backgrounds, they're going, oh, this guy's run, you know, over 50 marathons. And Charlotte had run, I think, 20 or 30 by then. So we both had the running credentials behind us. And then from there, it was, you know, how do we go about getting the word out? So that's how we ended up getting started. And we also, again, approaching this like a business. Kind of divided the market up into 3 different areas for youth, adults, and seniors with a 3-pronged approach looking at education, training, and sustainability. So the training part really kicked off with us in 2015 when we started pushing the concept of Blacks getting their coaching certifications. In fact, if you talk to most Black running coaches, you won't find that many that had the running certification before 2015. So we were the ones who kicked that off, literally bought out an RRCA class and truly started getting Blacks interested in getting their certification so that we wouldn't have as many running injuries. You were actually talking with people who had some knowledge about training. Sustainability focused on getting more Black running clubs out there and supporting Black running clubs. So in our Hall of Fame, we induct running clubs from all around the nation. A lot of the historic Black running clubs were inducted into the National Black Distance Running Hall of Fame. The education side of it focused on dispelling the myths behind why African Americans don't run distances. So it truly has been strategic over the years, and people are beginning to see the results of it.
Yeah, you have a 360 approach into integrating us into the culture of running. Like you're breaking through those barriers, and sounds like you're putting people in the right positions and putting them on that path Like, was it always like that long? It seems like you always had a long view approach to what you're doing. It wasn't like a quick, I don't know if you thought it was going to be like a quick thing, but I feel like you had a very long game view that we are seeing come to fruition now, as you're saying.
Yes, when I was in my teens and 20s, I actually read a lot of books about strategy. One of my favorite ones is A Spook Who Sat by the Door.
Bro, I read that. I read that this year. I read that this past year. That book is so good.
Yes. And that's one of the first books that I read where they talked about a Black distance runner, because one of the gang members was a distance runner. And so, yes. So I've always been a very long-thinking type of person, always looking at planning strategies and planning programs. And I find that when you do good things will come right back to you. Mm-hmm. So for example, when we started awarding college scholarships, we had given the scholarships out for a number of years. And in the beginning, it was just for a person's freshman year. And finally, one individual sent us a handwritten thank you note after they had received their scholarship for their freshman year. And I went back to our board and said, you know what? We have enough members now that we should be able to do this all 4 years. And, you know, this student was kind enough to come back and send us a thank you note.
Yeah.
So they need to be the first ones to get a scholarship for all 4 years. And she did. And it came back full circle, because when we were looking for a videographer for the very first documentary, she got her undergraduate degree in journalism, got a graduate degree in media, and was working in the D.C. area as a professional videographer for some of the streaming channels. I picked up the phone, called her. Kayla says, yeah, I'll work with you on the documentary.
That's beautiful.
No, that's wild. And like, I feel like that's one of the main meanings and the reasons to create this association of just having, of showing so many opportunities that can come from running that you don't even realize.
Exactly.
And it's like, I think that's one of the big things that people that Black people don't really understand, is that running isn't really just about running 26.2 miles or running a half marathon, whatever it is, but that community and the jobs and the relationships that are created over time is great to have, like, to have, for her to have that full circle moment, I bet was extremely fulfilling. Can you talk about just the relationships that you created over this long game journey that you've made throughout the years?
Well, our members have influenced me just as much as, I guess, as an organization, we've influenced them. In 2009, we had our annual summit at the Cowtown Marathon in Fort Worth, and it was also my 100th marathon. And it was at that summit where I got a chance to talk to a gentleman named Frederick Davis III. And he was telling me, he says, oh, well, you need to go ahead and pursue marathons in all 50 states, as well as Nathan Skipper, who was real interesting. Nathan was pursuing marathons in all 50 states, but he had a goal of taking his wife and two sons with him to visit all 50 states before his kids graduated from high school. Then the other person that was there was Angela Ivory. And Angela had run over 300 marathons and ultras. She ended up passing away of cancer, but she was also telling me to pursue 50 states. So it was not on my radar until I talked to them. So all of us are constantly kind of influencing, you know, each other and supporting each other and achieving, you know, the different goals. Now, the friend that was with me when I did that 4,000-mile road trip was not a runner, but they were so influenced by meeting all these different people along the way that they came back to Dallas. When the lease was up on their house, they put everything in storage. And they set a goal of running 5 and 10 Ks in all 50 states. So literally bought a RV and was traveling all around the country doing 5 and 10 Ks. So all of us end up motivating and inspiring each other. And so my big goal is, for me, it's being a grandfather. So that's those are my next projects, really, just being a really good grandfather.
No, that's awesome. I love that. I love that. And I think for most of this interview, we talked about a lot of the sunshines and the rainbows of creating this organization and creating the marathon. But going back to the early days or wherever you want to go, like, what's been some of the roadblocks where it seems like this long game and the strategy you created doesn't seem like it's going to work out? Like, what's been some of those roadblocks that come in your way?
I also just wonder, Tony, I don't get how you balance all of this, man. When I look at all these things, like from writing books to documentaries, being CEO, I don't, like, to start something
that is a lot.
New and like to stay consistent with what you've done with the Black Marathon Association. Like, you're coming up on 20 years, right? Like, yeah, like there had to be some time where you're like, man, this is so much. I don't know if I can still manage this, because I'm sure you were still working. Like, you know, you got your job right. And stuff. You were this dude's a professor too. This dude's taught classes. So yeah, like, how did you balance it? And that, yeah, was there like a time where you're like, dude, I don't know if I can really do this anymore?
That's a good question. I really limit my extracurricular activities. I don't watch a lot of television. I set my priorities where my number one priority is my health. So I feel like if I can stay healthy, I can do just about anything. I'm also very good about not overcommitting myself. People will come to me with different things and with different suggestions. And, you know, I look at it and say, hey, that's a great idea. Why don't you go ahead and do it? And they said, well, no, I don't want to do it, but I want you to do it. And it's like, well, no, it's not important enough to you if you're not willing to, you know, take the time out to do something. So I'm pretty good about saying no. And I'm also very conscious of my time. I like spending time with my family. So that's also a priority. And with the way we're organized, if you notice, we don't have running chapters in different cities around the country. So therefore, we don't have to try to manage a lot of different people, a lot of different organizations and activities. We basically feel that people at the local level know what's best for them. And the last thing that they really need is someone who's not in their city giving them direction and guidance and telling what they can and can't do. So we've always been open to everyone, whether you are a member of a running organization or not. You have some runners who are just solo runners, and they don't want to be a part of anything organized, but hey, they do like showing up, you know, once a year to meet with other Black runners. So for me, it's been all about time management. When I was about 8 years old, I was diagnosed as being a pre-diabetic, and a doctor said I would go on insulin by the time I was a teenager. I read Dr. Kenneth Cooper's book, New Aerobics, and there was one paragraph in it that said, diabetics who are dependent on insulin could decrease their insulin intake or go completely off of it if they maintain a fitness program. So in 1976, I set a lifetime goal of averaging running, walking, or crawling 3 miles a day. I've had kept a handwritten running journal since 1979. Last November, at the Berlin Marathon, I logged mile number 50,000. I had averaged exactly 3 miles a day, and I'm still not on insulin. So running marathons has truly been a distant second to me avoiding insulin. And I still average that 3 miles a day, and I'll keep doing it until the day I die. So, and it took a while to just say, I'm going to focus on this, and I'm not going to let anything get in the way of my averaging those 3 miles a day.
Dang, you live in proof. You live in proof that, like, it works and the system works and it can keep you healthy throughout those years. That's incredible. But what was, like, some of those roadblocks that along the way of you created National Black Marathoners Association, like, early on, that kind of just, that may have been stopped you guys? It's the whole thing. It's like, man, this is a little harder than I thought it was going to be.
We really didn't have roadblocks per se. We had, there were more individuals out there who were questioning why we should have a Black running organization, period.
Yeah.
So I was getting a lot of hate email. There's a lot of things that were going around, you know, social media about it. And my take on it is, you know, I can't control what people say. I can't control what people think. So therefore, I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just going to let my deeds speak for themselves, to just stay focused on the plan that we had developed. I was actually concerned at our very first summit that the race was going to be canceled, and that whites were going to show up, and it was just going to be horrible for us. But as it turns out, every year since our first year when we've had an annual summit at that particular race, they ended up setting a record for the most number of runners to show up. So that made us feel really good. And the running community kind of started recognizing it, started recognizing that. But we really didn't have any other obstacles other than people, you know, just talking smack, trying to put us down. So.
And y'all just kept on running. Y'all just like, we just gonna keep on doing what we doing. Yeah, I love that and love what you're doing and the next steps of just seeing where this is gonna go. So you guys are coming on, this is gonna be 20 years this year. When is that date that marks 20 years?
16 or 17?
Oh no, that's gonna be in December actually.
Okay.
So it's been a while. And one of the things we do as a board is we'll talk about with SWOT, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And we take a look at what's going on in the marketplace, just like any business would. And, you know, articulate, you know, what directions are things going? You know, what's missing in the marketplace? Is there a void that we could possibly step in and fill? So that's one of the ways we ended up starting the National Bike Distance Running Hall of Fame in 2013, because we realized that the accomplishments of African-American distance runners were kind of being written out of the record book, so to speak. I had received an email from one of the editors in Runner's World who was trying to find Marilyn Bevins. And he said, she's probably somewhere in your database. So I went through our database and couldn't find her. And so I started, you know, just doing all this research on her and found out that she had placed second at the 1977 Boston Marathon. And I thought to myself, why is he asking me about this lady who placed second at the 77 Boston Marathon when we're primarily a Black organization? Mm. But finally, I saw a video of her doing an interview and was shocked to see that she was African-American, born and raised in Baltimore. And bear in mind, I've been running since 1982. Well, marathon since 1982. I had been running since 1969, and I'd never heard of this lady. So that's something that we brought up to the board. And they said, well, have you heard of this guy named Ted Corbett? And I said, I remember reading about him in a book. And they said, well, did you know he's Black also? And I go, no, I never knew it. So again, looking at strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, we realized that there was an opportunity there to recognize the accomplishments of African-American distance runners. So we started the National Black Distance Running Hall of Fame. And the impact on the running community has been amazing. There were individuals who had been ignored by their own state and other national running organizations. And then when we inducted them in the Hall of Fame, that's when they suddenly started getting recognized by these other events. For example, when we had sent out a press release announcing the individuals who were being inducted in that first Hall of Fame in 2013, of course, naturally, we inducted Ted Corbett and Marilyn Bevins. At that time, the New York Roadrunners had not inducted Ted Corbett into their own Hall of Fame.
Mm.
And when you look at it to see the individuals who had been inducted prior to Ted being inducted, it's like, well, it would make sense that Ted would have been the first person inducted. it took a few months after we announced our induction that they decided they were going to induct Ted Corbett into their Hall of Fame. So
it's like when we recognize our, when we recognize ourselves, our own accomplishments, that forces everyone to, you know, give us those opportunities in a way. One thing I was thinking about too, I think this was y'all at the 2020 Olympic trials. One of my friends, my boy, Brandon Johnson, BJ, he was recognized, I believe, at some an event you all put on for Black marathoners. I was that you all? Am I right? Did y'all do something at the Atlanta Olympic trials?
No, we didn't do anything at the Atlanta Olympic trials.
Well, regardless, he was just like, you know, that did so much for him as a person, and that was so meaningful for him. And then another one of my coworkers, Ari Hendricks, she's like the third fastest black woman marathoner too, and like she has so much pride within that, and that has presented her with so many more opportunities, that the fact that she is recognized as that. And I don't know, is that like one of the reasons why it's important, you feel like it's important for us as Black people, as African Americans, to kind of recognize our own accomplishments?
Yes, it's one of my favorite quotes is, if we don't tell our story, then who will? So yeah, I think it's extremely important that we position ourselves to start telling our stories. I look at my granddaughter, and I think, you know, when I'm dead and gone, she could pull up the documentary Breaking 3 Hours and say, oh, I want to be like some of these women.
Mm-hmm.
But it took someone asking the question to actually start the list. And that was Shawana White.
That was her?
Yeah. Shawana, she sent an email to Runner's World, to Gary Corbett, and to me, asking how many African-American women had broken 3 hours in a marathon. And I, quite frankly, did not think it was possible to identify them. Gary Corbett took it on as a challenge. And he's the one who did all the work to come up with the list that has now was now known as the list. So yeah, Shawana White is the one who started that.
Shout out Shawana White. I just saw her in Orlando. We got a picture together. Yeah. I finally met her in person. You know, I got to talking to her. That's cool. I didn't know. That's a cool story.
Yeah, a lot of things get started from people simply asking questions. Someone said, well, you know, okay, so if you're the first Black in the world to run marathons on all 7 continents, who's the first Black to run marathons in all 50 states? And that sent us on a quest to find who that person was, and that was Alfred Claiborne. And when we reached out to him, he was just floored. And he was like, wow, you know, I never thought I would be recognized for anything like this. Even going back to the mile, when we had the Hall of Fame induction in St. Louis and we inducted Ron Gregory, we gave him a special award, which was the number one, with the date and time that he set the national high school record in the 1 mile. And after he finished giving his Hall of Fame speech, he sat back down at his table, and then he came back up and he said, you know, this is the first time I have ever been recognized for setting that national high school record back in the 1950s.
That's wrong.
Man. Yes.
Man. I don't know. I think I want to ask this as we start to close out. Just why do you feel like running is so important, not just especially like for Black people, just in general, but like over your years and through everything? And I know we talked about the importance of running on so many different levels, but like, why do you feel like running is so important? Because like you could do like what you're doing in so many different aspects and so many different fields, you know, like you could do it through basketball, you could do it through curling, but why is it so important to do this through running? Why do you feel that way?
You know, you are the first person who's asked that question. So back in the 1970s, after reading Dr. Hooper's book on new aerobics, where he talked about the importance of physically work, you know, having a physical fitness program. And I looked at all these different sports that were out there. I took away everything that involved a team because you may not always have a team with you. I kind of took away things that involved using a lot of equipment. I was at one point very heavily involved in a bicycle racing, but realized that, again, you're just sinking a lot of money into it. Running was the one thing where it involved the least amount of equipment. I could do it virtually anywhere in the world. I could do it in all kinds of weather. And if I stuck with it, I wouldn't have to take insulin. So the way I look at it is all the money I would have spent on insulin, on high blood pressure medicine, medicine for hypertension, all of the diseases of inactivity, I was able to take and use that money to travel around the world. So running is simplistic. It's just as basic as you can get. So that's the reason why I do it. And
yeah, and the benefits are so, I think of running now, of where I'm at, I'm not as competitive as I used to be, but I'm just like, I know how to get myself in shape and train. And all it takes is like putting on some shoes, you know, scheduling out your runs for the week. And there's so many health benefits that come back from that. And we didn't even go deep, like you were saying earlier, Joshua, all the opportunities to network and you naturally, organically meet people. And there's a lot of other, even like you could say financial benefits that can come from this, or just the opportunities to travel and all of the camaraderie that comes from it. But number one for Tony, he said, is his health. And that is a big thing in our community, is health issues. What are you putting in your body? How are you treating your body? And like the access to running is a very easy entry. You just got to get some shoes, some shorts, really.
Yes. And it's important to build something like your organization, Tony, because then it makes people realize that they're more than welcome, you know, like in this community. Because going back, which you were saying, how you could trace back the need to not run long distance of being put in a box in the slave times. I'm not being able to run far, but now to be able to see a Black kid doing distance when you're lining up for your first ever cross country race, you're kind of like, oh wait, I can. We actually out here. Well, you know what's even more impactful? Like I remember, like I had three other older brothers running already cross country, them doing their thing. So that's normal. So I was able to see that influence. But me being like a freshman in high school, and I seen, shout out, I don't know where this dude is now, Jeremiah Bias went to Vista Del Lago. This dude was beast. I remember he finished like fourth at IE. He placed at state, but just like, it was a small influence, but just seeing like him being great at the sport, I'm all like, dang, like we really out here. Like I can really run cross country and be good at the 800. Like that's influential in itself, to just like, it's small motivation, but it's motivation nonetheless that plays way bigger than you ever think. Just that simple little entry. You don't have to buy basketball. You don't have to buy a basketball court. You don't have to buy a net, some skates. Like you just need some shoes and save up a little bit. A watch would be nice, but you don't really need it. Just run.
And awesome. Like I said, in the book, The Spook Who Sat by the Door, the brother who was a distance runner, you know, he would be running. He would be solving problems while he was running. And that's exactly what I do. I had also read Dick Gregory's autobiography, Nigger. And he talked about the competitive side of distance running when he was an NCAA All-American. And that really also stuck with me, also the mental aspects of it.
Wait, Dick Gregory was an NCAA All-American too? That's what you said?
Yeah.
I did not know this, bro.
He was nice like that.
He started being a social activist as a result of his distance running. So when he was a junior in high school, he set the national high school record in a mile. However, they refused to recognize it. The state of Missouri refused to recognize it because it was run at an all-Black Negro track meet. So that September, if a senior year, he led a walk out of the Black high schools in St. Louis, and that forced the integration of high school sports in the state of Missouri. So Dick Gregory's activism literally got started as a result of them not recognizing him as a minor.
Obviously, that story need to be told. That story need to be told a lot more. I'm looking up this book right now on Amazon. I got this. I'm gonna have to get this tonight, man.
Well, I had an opportunity to interview him before he passed away, and that was really, really interesting. It's about 6 or 7 months before he passed away. The videographer had to stop the interview because they needed to switch out their SIM card. And a young lady approached Dick Gregory, who was working with him. She said, "Mr. Gregory, you know, we're going to have to leave. And, you know, because, you know, you've been talking too long." I was only supposed to talk to him for like 2 or 3 minutes. This ended up being 15 plus minutes. And Dick Gregory looked at her and he said, I'm the star. I want to do what I want to do. And I want to talk to this young man about my days as a distance runner." He just shut her down. She just turned and just walked away. And I thought to myself, this really was indeed an important part of his life.
Yeah. No, yeah. He wants it. He wants, yeah. Especially at that point in his life, he's like, this should be remembered. People should know that this was a part of me.
Yes.
Man, I love that. Tony, being able to come through on the podcast, has been a long time coming. You'll be able to drop your wisdom and like history, and not just history, but stuff that's so relevant today that's going to push forward to see where Black distance running goes on from here. Shout out Nathan Martin. You feel me? He finished fourth.
Seventh
at the U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials. There's a lot of us out here doing the thing, and it's great to see and appreciate you coming through.
Aaron, and shout out to Tony for just doing the work, man. Me and Joshua set out on this journey of two Black runners, and yeah, we had a whole season. The real ones know, what we were like, what is the Black running community? And like, it's here. It's not just people me and Joshua's age. There's people that have been doing this work for many years and that are going to continue doing this work. So Tony, before we let you go, let us know how people can support the National Black Marathoners Association. When is your new film coming out? How can they get in touch with you?
Okay. We have a lot of information available on our website, which is blackmarathoners.org. Mm-hmm. We also have a very active Facebook group, as well as a Facebook page. If you like the Facebook page, if you notice, we are doing something every day for the month of February, recognizing African-American distance runners. So if you want to know a little bit about running, Black running history, that's a place to go. We are also having our annual summit at the Oakland Marathon over the March 16th weekend. And we will be showing a documentary, We Are Distance Runners, there at that summit. That'll be shown on March 16th. So again, go to our website. We have information about how you can go about obtaining tickets. We are a nonprofit organization. We have been since day one. So we would gladly accept any donations that you want to send our way.
Aaron, you opened up. You should have done your first marathon there, bro. You messed up.
I literally was looking on the website right now and I saw March 16th. I'm doing the LA Marathon and it's on the 16th. I literally saw that right now and I was like, dang, I could have.
Bro, just do both.
You crazy. I'm not Tony, bro. I can't run. I can't do no Antarctica, Australia type. I don't know.
You're just taking one step at a time.
Exactly. Come on, man. You can do both.
The way I told myself in Antarctica was, if I stopped, I froze to death. So the whole thing is just keep moving.
Yeah, that's good motivation right there to finish, you know?
No, that's crazy. That's wild. Man, we appreciate you, Tony. This has been a pleasure. We're going to have to run it back to talk about just more of your story. And we're going to have to run it back just to talk about anything that develops over time, you know? And just, we would love to bring you on just to really pick your brain about anything going on in culture. Appreciate you and Have a great rest of your day. You know,
you guys are doing a great job. I enjoy listening to your podcast.
Thank you, man. Thank you. We really appreciate you.
Okay. Take care.